Welcome to Power Play. I'm Evan Solomon. On our program today, a massive second wave lockdown.
Have to make sure that we focus on the health of the people of Ontario, and every other province should do that.
Toronto and the Peel region are locked down today to stem a troubling rise in COVID-19 cases. This as Alberta brings in new measures to calm down the crushing growth of cases there. It's shocking. But are lockdowns really the answer? And why are some businesses forced to close and others allowed to remain open? We begin our coverage at Queen's Park in Toronto with CTV's Colin DeMello. Then the Mississauga Mayor Bonnie Crombie joins us. And then, finally, the government announces its long-awaited fiscal update. That'll be next Monday. But will there be new supports for businesses? And will the new business rent subsidy that came online today be more effective than the last one?
It would be so tragic for any viable business, charity, or nonprofit to have made its way through most of the pandemic and then to falter just now as the end is in sight.
The end in sight. Some businesses can get 65% of their rent paid, in businesses in the lockdown areas up to 90%. But is it too little? Too late for many. Small Business Minister Mary Ng will join us on the program. Plus, Operation Vaccine. Who will run the logistical nightmare of distributing those precious vaccines? This is Oxford's University's AstraZeneca's vaccine candidate is the third great medical hope. But how will you get these vaccines? Ontario has just tapped the former chief of the defense staff, Rick Hillier, to lead their distribution plan. Can Canada pull it all off on a national level? We'll speak to retired Major General Dave Fraser on what that entails. All that plus the Atlantic bubble has burst. Why? The PEI Premier Dennis King will join us on why his island has just left that fame pact. This is Power Play. Let's get to the players. So Ontario broke another single-day COVID-19 record. On the same day, Toronto and Peel region entered a major lockdown. The province added 1,589 new cases today, marking the third straight day its reported case counts are above 1,500. This is way too high. Will new lockdown measures change the grim trajectory? We begin our coverage today with CTV News Queen Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello. And Colin, great to see you. Obviously, long lines over the weekend at LCBOs and shopping before the lockdown. What has been the reaction in Toronto, where you are, to the heavy lockdown?
Yeah, I mean, you know, over the weekend, Evan, it kind of seemed like the world was ending. I mean, you know, even personally, trying to go to a grocery store, there were lines outside the grocery store, Canadian Tires, Walmarts, Costco's. Everyone was looking to stock up. But it's such a world of a difference if you go outside of the GTA, because outside of the Greater Toronto Area, where there is no impending lockdown, over the weekend, it was rather calm. People were going about their business just as everything was normal. So it is really a tale of two different worlds. And that's because the numbers are showing that as well, because the Peel and Toronto areas, these two regions are a hotbed of COVID-19 activity. And I think the province is really looking to get a handle on these two regions, because this is what's really driving the province's numbers at this point.
Yeah, although people leaving is an interesting kind of leakage problem there. What about small businesses? Because you just said Costco's open, small businesses aren't. And we're going to have the president of the Canadian Federation of Independent Small Businesses, Dan Kelly, join us later on the program. Are small businesses feeling like they're unfairly being targeted?
Oh, 100%. I mean, small businesses across this province are being told you have to shut your doors. In Toronto and Peel, where the lockdown is, they're closed for in-person shopping. They can only do curbside pickup. And a lot of these small businesses, the CFIB will say, they don't really have that online mechanism really set up to accept payments and, you know, for you to browse through everything in their store. Yeah. Whereas I can walk into a Costco right after this or a Walmart, and really, I could shop for anything I wanted, from clothing to anything else. Yeah. So I think there is a lot of concern among those small businesses that, you know, their viability and their livelihoods are at stake here. And they're saying, why is it that the big box stores get the advantage over us? So they're asking for a number of things. One, to at least allow them to open with limited capacity, a max of 3 people in the store. And they're asking for a level playing field. Okay, so you can go into Walmart to go get your chicken and your eggs and et cetera. But why do you need to go get paint or, you know, lighting for your home? Maybe they should, you know, section off certain parts of Walmart so that the essential stuff is open and the non-essential stuff is closed. The premier, though, shut that idea down today.
Yeah, he did. But he did appoint Rick Hillier, the former CDS chief of the defense staff. And we'll try to dig into that to deliver that key vaccine. When that's going to happen, we don't know. Colin DeMello in Queen's Park. Great to have you on the program. Thanks, sir.
My pleasure.
Let's go to Mississauga, one of the cities under lockdown. Mayor Bonnie Crombie joins us to give us a firsthand account of what that's like. Mayor Crombie, always good to have you on the program. The first day of these lockdowns, how are not only people, but how are small businesses handling this, Mayor?
Thanks, Evan. Thanks for having me on today. And of course, we've heard from many small businesses, retailers, restaurants that are extremely frustrated. They don't think it's fair. And of course, it's not fair. Nothing about the virus is fair. But unfortunately, this decision, this action was taken to avoid a larger and longer lockdown. It's very important that people follow the guidelines. We don't need them out shopping now. Evan, we need them to stay home and only go out for the essentials.
What do you tell people, like Colin DeMello was just saying, well, I can go to Costco, and small business saying, wait, the virus doesn't care if I'm going to a big box or a small box. Why not let small businesses open, limiting three people, two people in the store at once, and instead of just letting people pile up at Costco or a big box store?
That's what we've been hearing. And of course, you know, I find it equally frustrating. I'm frustrated, but these are decisions taken at the provincial table and we enforce them. Now, as I said, this is done to avoid a larger, longer lockdown. There is nothing fair about this virus, but we have to all come together at this time and pull our weight. And let's put things in order that we can control right now. The virus is controlling us right now. We're not controlling the virus. We need agreement from the province that we're going to get more testing done, that from the federal government that we'll have an isolation center here in place, and that workers can receive, whether from their companies or from the provincial government, sick pay benefits, so they can safely, if tested positive, go to an isolation center, not return to their jobs, and know, have the confidence that they will be paid. Because many people, as we're hearing, are going to work because their symptoms are mild, or maybe they don't think they have COVID, right? And so we need them to stay home, quarantine, whether in the isolation centers or in their homes, not go out, and have that assurance, that confidence that they won't lose their jobs and that they will be paid.
Talk a bit about the new rent subsidy, and I'll have Minister Ng on in just a minute to talk about that. But this hits municipalities like yours. Do you think now businesses can directly apply for this? They don't have to go through their landlord. The program was a bit of a bust before. Do you think this will help save some small businesses, especially in cities like yours, where there's a lockdown and they're getting absolutely crushed?
Absolutely. So it was complicated to apply for those. The application process is open now. And of course, the small businesses, restaurants especially, and the smaller retailers can apply to have 90% of their rent covered. I'm delighted that the Senate passed C9, so we get the extra wage subsidy, we get the extra rent subsidy, and the province has stepped up and doubled the amount of financial support that they're providing, up to $600 million for rent relief and for energy rebate as well. So there are a number of supports in place. And today on the GTHA mayor's calls, as you know, Mayor Tory, John Tory, brings us all together on Mondays at lunchtime to talk about our issues. We're calling out to companies in the provincial government to allow, number one, the isolation centers to get built faster. Number two, to provide sick pay benefits to workers who may be positive or so that they can isolate and stay home. We need people to stay home right now. Now's not the time to go shopping, region hopping, go to other regions to get your shopping done. It's not time to go to Costco and the big box stores.
But they're doing it. And how do you prevent people who are in a lockdown area from saying, you know what, I'm hopping in my car, I'm going to go to a non-lockdown area. You know what, I'm going to go to Pickering or something, like another area. What's stopping that?
Well, the honor system.
Enforcing these bubbles.
Well, the honor system is stopping them. They need to do the right thing for the right reason. And right now, the right thing to do is to stay home, not go out shopping because you're bored or you need to get ahead of your Christmas shopping. You need to go out for the essentials, and you need to go out and do that about once a week. And that's it. I said this earlier, this virus is controlling us. We're not controlling the virus, and we need to gain back control. And that's what's happening here. Of course, they're frustrated. I'm frustrated for them. But this is the right thing to do for the health, safety, and well-being of our community. You can see what's going on in the GTHA. Peel Region, for the sixth day in a row, has more cases than the city of Toronto does. And that's very concerning to me as mayor. So yes, I'm balancing lives with livelihoods. But right now, we got to take control back, and people got to do what's right. And what's right today is to stay home and only go out for the essentials. Don't go out because you're bored. Don't go to another region because you've decided you want to go to a Black Friday shopping. That's just wrong.
Mayor, real quick, we heard now that Rick Hillier, the former CDS, chief of the defense staff, has been appointed by Doug Ford in your province to do the logistical challenge of getting a vaccine. Any details? Have municipalities been let in on the details of the plan, the distribution plan?
Let me first say that I have a lot of confidence in General Hillier that he'll be taking the helm on this. That's fantastic. We don't have the details yet. They'll be given to, they'll be provided to the public health tables, and then the municipalities will learn, will go from there. So I know that obviously frontline healthcare workers, essential workers should be the first to receive the vaccine. That's logical, but I don't have any more information at this time, Evan.
Well, take good care, Mayor. Always appreciate the time. And
thanks very much for having me.
Cities are just, they're trying to bear out. People are doing their best. I appreciate that.
They are.
All
just
right,
remind
that's
them,
the mayor
stay
of
home.
Mississauga. Stay home. That's the message. She said it. Listen, it's the right thing to do, but it is hard. Let's take a look at where cases stand across the country. And it's not great. Ontario is still registering, as the mayor was just talking about, the highest case count, 1,589, 19 more deaths. But the province is just marginally ahead of Alberta. Alberta is reporting 1,549 cases and five additional deaths. Remember, Ontario's got 10 million more people than Alberta, but Alberta is almost neck and neck there. This is not a race you want to win. Quebec saw 1,164 cases and has reported 13 more deaths. Manitoba reported 546. Saskatchewan, 235. It's just growing. We got to do our part. We want to hear from you. Your thoughts on this, on the program, on what you want to tell us, and we'll listen to you and try to ask those questions on social media. You can hit us on, you name it, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, email, you name it. Coming up, let's dig into this business. Help for businesses. Is more coming? Small businesses are been hit hard by restrictions and lockdowns. They get a second chance. Is it enough?
I don't understand why they close all the small businesses, but Walmart is open, Home Depot is open, Canadian Tire, because there's more crowd there.
And what news will there be in next week's big fiscal update? Could a confidence vote force an election? Small Business Minister Mary Ng joins us next. Stay with Power Play.
Went to Boots with the kids and finish my daughter's birthday shopping because I know the malls are closing. Everything's closing.
I don't understand why they close all the small businesses.
That's a bitter pill. It's hard, right? It's hard. It's really hard. Like, it's hard to understand the logic of why some things are open and why some things are closed.
Confusion. And it is hard. People are having a hard time. Look, supporting Canadians in the pandemic has been the core mandate of the federal government. And next Monday, they'll finally reveal a fiscal update on the cost, maybe even have some new programs. Could it be a confidence vote and force an election? That is happening while the federal government today rolled out its long-awaited sequel to the commercial rent relief program. The first plan had very little uptake. Landlords had to apply. They just didn't do it. Now businesses can apply directly. The new plan covers up to 65% of rent or commercial mortgages. And if you are in a hard-hit area like a lockdown, up to 90%. So is it coming too late, though, and is it enough? Should the government be doing more to help independent businesses instead of big box stores like Walmart and Costco, who are allowed to stay open? Let's bring in the Small Business Minister, Mary Ng, to discuss this. Minister, always good to have you on the program. Can I just start with a fiscal update, because that was just announced by the Finance Minister late this afternoon. There'll be a in November, next Monday, I guess. Will it be a confidence motion?
Well, I think the finance minister is going to table the the fall economic statement and present that to Canadians and to parliamentarians. And we're looking forward to doing that. And she's looking forward to doing that next week.
Right. But again, will there be a vote on it because there'll be new legislation or new spending? Could this be a confidence vote that could trigger an election, or is it just going to be a statement with no new legislation, no new spending?
Well, I don't think I want to get into the details of that. And in fact, I'm looking forward to the details of that and the finance minister and the deputy prime minister sharing that with Canadians. We've been really clear as a government right from the get-go and including recently in the throne speech about how important it is to support Canadians through COVID-19 so that we can get ourselves through this, keeping Canadians healthy and safe and get on that road to economic recovery by doing a good job managing the COVID-19 pandemic.
Right. You appreciate that people, especially the opposition, is keen to know this because there hasn't been a budget in almost 2 years. And again, I'll ask you one more time. Do you think there will be new legislation in it or new spending? And I know it's just before the holiday break for Parliament. And will there be a chance to vote on it? Or is it just simply kind of that? I know it's a fall economic statement, but it will just be a picture of the spending.
Well, I think what would be terrific is let's wait until the Deputy Prime Minister and Finance Minister puts the fall economic statement before Parliament and to Canadians. And I know that there will be ample time to have a conversation about what's in it and the way forward.
To be fair, won't be that much time. There'll be 1 week of debate, and then there's the holiday break. Let me just go on to the rent subsidy, the sequel. How will your government ensure this time that there'll actually be more take-up? Because the last one just really didn't have a lot of take-up at all.
Well, let me start there. The last program helped keep 1.8 million Canadians employed. So I think that it certainly was helpful to all of those businesses that employ all of those Canadians. And today, along with the Deputy Prime Minister, Finance Minister, we announced the opening of the portal where businesses can apply directly for this important support. Of course, we are seeing across the country various stages of COVID-19 and the experiences. And this, of course, is hard hitting for small businesses. So really looking forward to small businesses getting access to this. And payment will go out as early as December the 4th for our businesses across the country.
But the support is retroactive to September 27th. What about the businesses that didn't get support from the government before that date? Their landlords didn't apply to it. What happens to them?
Well, I think it's really important to have supports in place that helps our businesses now and certainly continues to help our businesses going forward. There is a whole suite of programming that is there to help businesses, including the rent support, of course, which is one part. But the other part, of course, is the wage subsidy support and then small business loan support. So a package, if you will, of support for our businesses. And really, that is what I think has been helping businesses to bridge through this time. And I think it is important to make sure that we have this support right through until next summer, which is what we've committed to for both the rent support as well as for the wage subsidy.
Right. Again, but if your landlord didn't apply last time, it's tough for those other businesses. They won't get the same level of support. Just talk about the lockdown areas. A lot of not just Toronto, Peel, but you look at Alberta, Manitoba, all over this country, cities are facing, they're looking down the barrel of a lot of lockdowns. But a lot of small businesses are hurting. The CFIB, the Canadian Federation of Independent Businesses, says Canada may lose between 55,000 and 218,000 more small businesses before the end of the pandemic. But big box stores like Costco are allowed to stay open. Well, small businesses aren't. Do you have a message for your municipal or provincial counterparts about that?
Well, I mean, those decisions, as you rightly pointed out, Evan, are made at the local level, as they should. And no doubt the local officials will listen very intently to their small businesses, as I do. I have, I want to commend the CFIB and the work that they do and the advocacy that they do. Certainly this rent program and the way that it is designed considers a lot of that feedback that comes directly from businesses. But I do think that there is something we can all do, and that is to support the businesses in our local community, in our neighborhoods. So we can deliberately make that choice to make sure that we are supporting those small businesses. And many of them during this time have, will offer curbside pickup or offer takeout in the case of the small restaurant, and are finding ways to serve their customers. So I think all of us have that choice. And I would encourage all of us to support our small businesses in all of our communities.
All right, I got to leave it there. Although I got to say, and we'll talk to the CFIB in a minute, a lot of small businesses are deeply concerned that you can go to Costco and line up for everything and they're forced to shut down. But Minister, I do appreciate your time as always. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Evan.
All right, that's Minister Mary Ng talking about the new rent support for businesses. And I think because businesses can apply directly, you'll see a lot more uptake on that. Before we head to the break, some other news you should know right now. TELUS is ditching Huawei and will build out its own 5G network without the Chinese back gear. The telecom company says it will rely instead on manufacturers in Western countries and South Korea. This is the last of Canada's big three major telcos to reject Huawei as a supplier of mobile 5G tech. The news comes just days after a conservative-backed motion passed in the House of Commons requiring the federal government to provide an answer within 30 days as to whether they'll include Huawei in their 5G rollout. President-elect Joe Biden's team has released the names of some of the people who will make up his cabinet, and there is some definite history being made. Janet Yellen has been chosen as Biden's incoming Treasury Secretary. Of course, Janet Yellen, you may remember, is a former head of the central bank in the U.S., the Federal Reserve, from 2014 to 2018, so highly respected. Joe Biden will also select Avril Haines as his Director of National Intelligence. That's the first woman ever nominated to that position. She served as the Deputy CIA Director under President Obama and was also his Deputy National Security Advisor. He's also tapping Alejandro Mayorkas as his Homeland Security Secretary. That would be the first Latino head of the department. And career diplomat Linda Thomas-Greenfield is Biden's choice for U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, which earns her a seat as his, on his National Security Council. And a familiar face is returning. John Kerry, who served as the U.S. Secretary of State under Barack Obama, will become Joe Biden's special presidential envoy on climate, an issue that has taken a backseat in the last 4 years. But, of course, with someone who was, of course, the standard bearer for the Democratic Party, John Kerry will elevate that position as the environmental czar. That's someone I'm sure the Canadian government will have to work very closely with. Coming up next, PEI in Newfoundland and Labrador pop the Atlantic bubble. Check this out.
I have made the tough decision to implement a circuit break.
As cases continue to rise, the two provinces take a proactive step and impose travel restrictions. PEI's Premier Dennis King joins us next to explain why.
As Prince Edward Island have decided to temporarily suspend all non-essential travel to and from Prince Edward Island, meaning we would be suspending our participation in the Atlantic bubble for a 2-week period.
This is not an easy decision, but as your Premier, as a physician, and as a concerned father and citizen, I must do what I've promised: protect the best interests of the people of Newfoundland and Labrador.
Well, as you just heard, the Atlantic bubble has burst. PEI Newfoundland and Labrador announced today they're exiting the bubble that allowed free travel between the four Atlantic provinces as cases are rising in New Brunswick and Nova Scotia. So now Newfoundland, Labrador and PEI have suspended all non-essential travel for a minimum of 2 weeks, including to other Atlantic provinces, of course. In PEI, all non-island residents will be required to apply for travel approval and must quarantine for 14 days after that. So why is this happening now? Is this now the end of the famous Atlantic bubble? Let's bring in the Premier of PEI, Dennis King. Always good to have you on the program, sir. Thanks for joining us. Tell us about why you made this decision to leave the Atlantic bubble.
Well, I mean, our suspension for non-essential travel for a two-week period is really just a preemptive measure or a proactive measure to try to stay ahead of the curve, essentially, as we have been doing here in the province. I'm not sure if all of your viewers ever know that the quality and the level of life that we've had here through COVID has probably been the envy of the country in terms of our students are in school, we're able to go to restaurants, gyms, play hockey, all of those things, and really wanted to just use all of these tools we have in our tool belt to try to protect that. So that's what led us to today's decision.
But your chief public health officer, Dr. Heather Morrison, said COVID's been, quote, knocking at the door of the province and it's knocking now. Tell us what that means. Was there a concern that with the cases rising in Nova Scotia and New Brunswick, you just thought, you know what, the bubble's a fiction now. We gotta create our own isolated island.
I mean, the bubble was always very, tenuous at the best of times, simply because all of the cases of COVID we've had in the province have been imported into our province through travel. As we look at the growth in cases across all jurisdictions in the country and see that come to our maritime and Atlantic shores, it causes us to be careful and to be mindful. And because we're an island province, much the same as Newfoundland and Labrador, we have the ability to make it more restrictive to come here with the hopes of keeping the virus out as much as we can. So that led us to today. It wasn't an easy decision. It's one we hope is very temporary, but that is where we're at as of midnight tonight.
Well, especially for your island where tourism is such a big deal, even within the Atlantic bubble. So I know this isn't necessarily the high season of that. Is there a threshold that Nova Scotia and New Brunswick might meet that you may agree to re-enter a bubble?
I think all of the decisions that we've made have been based upon the epidemiology, have been based upon the realities of what we see in other jurisdictions and how that impacts us here. So I think in 2 weeks' time, if we're able to see to maintain a level that we have here in Prince Edward Island first and then see a cresting and a diminishing of the wave in the maritime provinces and beyond, then I think that we would be in a position to go back to where we were. But those are a lot of ifs right now, and we have to just see what takes place. And as I say, we have to just do what we can do as a proactive measure to try to stay ahead of it here.
Are you concerned? I'm just trying to establish the capacity system of your healthcare system on the island. How quickly would your system be overwhelmed by COVID?
And look, that's a good question, and that's exactly why we are doing what we are doing here. We are a small jurisdiction, of course, about 160,000 people. We have a good healthcare system that is strong and ready to act, but our ability to deal with a large outbreak here is very, very limited, and we would be quickly overwhelmed if we were to get up into the early hundreds, for example, of cases that would need to be hospitalized, etc. So we just need to be careful. We need to be mindful and to take these measures. We don't take them lightly, but we really feel it's the best decision to make. And we never, ever, as the province of Prince Edward Island, want to be closing down to the rest of the region or the rest of the country. It's not who we are. And I can't wait until such time as we can have the free flow of traffic again here.
Well, let's talk about that. Has the federal government given you or your chief medical officer any idea about when PEI could get a vaccine and how many doses PEI will get? Have they let you in on that plan?
We are working along with our national counterparts in terms of a vaccine. It's still premature to talk about numbers of a vaccine because we really, as promising as it does look, we don't have it yet. What I know from talking to my federal counterparts is the federal government will handle the initial rollout. of the vaccine to provinces. We know we will get our fair share of that. To what extent that is, we don't know. Right. But we're also, you know, we're national partners here, and we want to be helpful. So
if
there are others that need it more than us, obviously we would defer to that. But we need to have the vaccine here as well.
Okay, that's interesting. I'll press you a bit on the fair share. Do you expect it to be proportional? You've heard, you know, Ontario, Saskatchewan, and Alberta have announced that they basically extrapolated that they'll get a proportional number. They want as many as possible. Their situation is obviously different than yours. But do you expect it to be divvied up proportionally?
I don't know that yet. I suspect there will be a certain amount of that, and there will also be some, determining who needs what and who needs where at what time. So I do still think it's premature, Evan, to get to that at this point. We're in the planning stages of that. Our public health office is working with their national counterparts, et cetera. And, I do know that the federal government will, it seems, handle the rollout, and I feel very confident that we'll be ready here. And be ready to distribute the vaccine when it comes.
Just real quick, I got a few seconds. Do you think the military will be involved? And do you, would you want the military involved in the logistics of it on your island?
I'll leave that to the federal government. If that is the case, wonderful. But my concern really is just to try to get the vaccine here as quickly as possible and get it distributed to Islanders and Canadians so life can return to normal.
You say it. Amen to that. I hope it happens soon. Premier, great to have you on the program. Thank you.
Thank you, Evan. Great to be here.
And speaking of the military precision is clearly needed for this vaccine rollout. Check this out.
And we need military precision when it comes to this distribution and logistics. It's going to be the largest distribution, the most important distribution we've seen in generations.
So the Ontario government taps a retired general, Rick Hillier, to lead the charge. The press gallery weighs in. What are those challenges to get you a vaccine? Stay with Power Play to find out.
These vaccines, they will be absolutely critical. And we are working hard with the federal government to get absolute certainty about the path forward on Health Canada approvals and on timelines on when Ontario will receive our shipments. I won't sugarcoat it. Rolling it out, distributing this vaccine, it will be a massive logistical challenge. In fact, without the right planning, it risks being a logistical nightmare.
True words. Look. Canada's got to be commended on the first thing, access. We have chips on the table. We will get access to vaccines. How many, we don't know. But how will you get them? The distribution thing could be, as the Premier of Ontario said, a nightmare. We've heard positive updates from vaccine trials, so the logistics becomes the key issue now. Premier Doug Ford did announce that the retired former CDS Chief of the Defence Staff General Rick Hillier will head up Ontario's vaccine task force. The Canadian military says it's preparing to play a part in the eventual rollout. But how do you do it? What are the challenges? The press gallery is going to dig into that. Tanya McCharles is a senior reporter with the Toronto Star. Ian Bailey is the reporter with the Globe and Mail in Vancouver. And our special guest is retired Major General David Fraser, who knows a thing or two about logistics. Good to see all of you on a Monday evening. General, first of all, I always thank you for your service to our country. Can you give us a sense of what the logistical challenges might be on a rollout of this scale, something that your former friend and colleague, Rick Hillier, might have to deal with?
Well, let's not forget, we live in the second largest country in the world. We're a small population. This is a logistical challenge, to say the least. The military have outstanding planning capability. The fact that we support civil authorities on missions around the world and provide humanitarian support, this is right up the alley for the Canadian Forces. They have the people to help augment provincial authorities, and we also have the capabilities of aircraft logistics, and we can augment and fill in holes where the provincial authorities need people to help out. Because everyone's going to want to get this vaccine right away. And this is not a typical vaccine. There are many challenges about how cold you have to keep it to. So the military, you have one of those people at your desk helping planning, it will help you get this thing delivered, as the premier said earlier.
Yeah, Tonda, General Fraser talked about the cold chain. You got to store these at, for the Pfizer vaccine, for example, at negative 75. You got to buy freezers. You got to then distribute it. You can't just ship it off to Shoppers Drug Mart. What kind of logistical challenges do you think the government has to prepare to deal with, and prepare pretty quick?
Yeah, no, there are massive challenges. I've been writing about this for a couple of weeks. I find it interesting that Ontario moved to appoint Rick Hillier today to lead their effort, because in Ottawa, it's very hard. There are a lot of mixed messages about the role the military are going to play. I know from looking at some of the procurement documents that the military are going to be involved in setting up a national operations center to receive shipments of vaccines. What role they actually have in transporting it to other centers, or even, as General Fraser suggested, actually sort of getting it out the door, maybe even helping, you know, bring it to offices. Who knows, maybe even in some cases putting it in people's arms. We don't have answers to that. And last week at a committee, we got very conflicting information from the defense minister, deputy defense minister, who said that actually the military hasn't got a role at this point in it. So, you know, look, I think that the government's feeling pressure, and every time they're asked, they respond with vague generalities that the it's not the role of the military to be in long-term care homes or to do this kind of thing. But if called upon, they, or if needed, they will task them. So I think mixed messages all around in, so far as the military goes, but an acknowledgement that the logistical challenge in front of them is big.
All right. Guys, just Ian, I want to go to you. I want to inform our viewers, though, some news. The Premier of Saskatchewan, Scott Moe, is now isolating for because of a possible exposure. No testing yet, but he is preemptively just isolating right now. But it does show, Ian, this is going to affect everybody. The logistics of this can they have to, you know, it's almost like a battle scene that Dave Fraser was talking about, Ian. You know, the people on the front lines, the leadership might have to deal with this. What do you think the challenges will be?
Well, you know, I was walking around in the last few days, keeping a distance here in British Columbia. But you look around and you think that everyone in sight in the center of one of Canada's largest cities is going to have the option of taking this vaccine. People in all walks of life, all kinds of responsibilities. So the challenge, especially with the issues around temperature, are huge. I mean, you think of an election, for example, where people go to vote. But this is larger because more people will have to have the option and will probably take the vaccine than even vote in elections. Here in BC, we haven't hired anyone of the with the experience of the government, at least, of General Hillier. But the premier and our Dr. Bonnie Henry, our public health officer, has said when the vaccine is ready, BC will be ready, something the premier said last week. So it's going to be really, really complex, unprecedented.
Yeah, Dave, General Fraser, talk about the lift capacity of the military. I'm intrigued. Like, they got to got freezers. As Tonda talks about, they got to move it around. They may even have to set up stations. What kind of capacity in terms of the number of men and women in the military? This could be a year-long process. What kind of capacity does the Canadian military have to be involved domestically in this kind of operation?
Well, I just want to pick up one point first of all. The military is in support of civil authorities. So the civil authorities have got to ask the military what they need, and then the military will respond. The actual capacity of what the military has for logistical support is limited. There's much, much more capability. If you look at Air Canada, you look at any of the trucking companies. But what the military can do is get into the isolated areas and those areas that are hard to get to, because we are so dispersed in this country. The problem is not going to be in the cities. It's going to be in the Arctic. It's going to be in northern Canada. It's going to be in isolated pockets throughout coast to coast to coast. That's where the military can start filling in and helping out and augmenting what commercial assets have.
Yeah, and just to that point, I mean, just to that point, I mean, the government has put in the contracts that they've signed with the bidders that are basically shortlisted now to do this job, that they'll have to do that as well, get it out to remote and rural communities, northern communities. But look, I think there's a bit of a, not to be a Debbie Downer here, but there's a bit of a dose of reality here as well that everybody ought to understand. According to the delivery contracts that Health Canada has now signed, or the government of Canada has signed, Canada will only get 6 million
doses by the end of March. And really, that's just going to be enough to inoculate less than 8% of the Canadian population if it's a two-dose vaccine that they go with. Mm. So far, a couple of them are two-dose vaccines. Not all require minus 70 storage either. Some will be stable in a refrigerator. The one today that we got the good news about, AstraZeneca's, is less onerous in terms of what it requires for freezing. It just requires a refrigerator. So, look, I think it's all very much in flux.
And on something Tonda just said a moment ago, the vetting for this thing in terms of, you know, getting the vaccine to those who need it most while others may want it but not be entitled to it is going to be really, really tricky. It's going to be really tricky to see how that works out and how that plays out as well.
Yeah, logistics and ethics. General Fraser, really great to have you on, and I'm sure we'll have many more conversations as the military, I'm sure, will play a key role. Ian and Tonda, stick around. I want to talk about the busiest time of the year for businesses, and some businesses are closed. Check this out.
Mm-hmm. It means we'll be out of business probably in the end of 28 days.
Is the boost to small businesses enough? And why are some big stores allowed to open and not small businesses? Dan Kelly from the Canadian Federation of Independent Businesses joins us next. Stay right here with Power Play. All right, welcome back to the program. We spoke to the small business minister, Mary Ng, talking about the delayed commercial rent relief program. Obviously, this time of year is critical for small businesses. But what is going to happen? Is the new rent relief that the government just offered today reintroduced? Basically, the sequel. Is it going to be enough now that businesses can directly apply? And why are some small businesses closing, but big box stores in lockdown areas open? The press gallery is back. Tonda McCharles is a senior reporter with the Toronto Star. Ian Bailey is with the Globe and Mail. And Dan Kelly is the president and CEO of the Canadian Federation of Independent Businesses. Dan, great to have you back on this program. Two things. The commercial rent relief program, the sequel. How effective do you hope or does this need to be?
It's absolutely critical. We've got a lifeline now, finally, backdated to October, to help small firms deal with what's going on right now. It is a way better program. It doesn't have the landlord requirement. It gives support to businesses of all degrees of revenue losses. Even those that own their own building can get some subsidy from it. It's a pretty solid program. I'm worried that it's not going to be enough. And it certainly doesn't do anything to help those businesses that didn't get the CECRA program from the spring lockdowns and still have those huge rent bills unpaid on their books.
Yeah, Tonda, weigh in on that, because they're trying to tweak this to fix it, but, you know, is it enough?
Well, who knows? I mean, look, these lockdown orders are sweeping, except for what appears to be many of the big box stores. So totally, the small businesses and smaller places are really struggling to go up against them. I was just interested today, even in Toronto, I guess HBC, Hudson's Bay Company, didn't close down one of their main stores down on Queen Street because right. They have some groceries or some offerings of food in there. And Hudson's Bay is a store, a chain, a company that has not been paying its rent in the pandemic. A massive, giant company like that. So, you know, these are huge, huge problems and very complex in terms of public policy making. I just hope that some of the messages that Dan and others have been sending to the government about all the supports that are going to be needed are going to be able to be sustained sort of also, you know, through the winter, because I think many, many, many small businesses, at least in our neighborhoods here, they look like they're really, really struggling.
Yeah, what about out west? I mean, I know you're not in a lockdown there, Ian, but look, lockdowns, everyone's staring down the barrel of a lockdown, and yet it seems like the big box stores remain open and the small businesses are getting nailed.
Well, you know, out here, you can go shopping. You can, I was out yesterday. People are in shops. You have to wear a mask in a store. But, you know, we look at what's going on in Ontario, and that's not happening here yet, because who knows where this thing is going. The case count's still going up. It's a grim situation here. masks have been now mandated in British Columbia in indoor public spaces. And I think there's a hope among some retailers that that may bend the curve enough to sort of save some of these small businesses, which are really, really struggling out here.
Hmm. Yeah. Just quickly, are you hearing that, Dan, from small business owners? Like, what about us? Why is it safe to go to Costco and not to Joe's, you know, clothing shop?
Why can't I buy a book in an independent bookstore, but I can line up at Costco and buy one in the big bin with 500 other people? The rules don't make any sense. In fact, even from a, you know, they're deeply unfair, but even from a COVID perspective, how does it make sense to shut down the small guy that's lucky to see a dozen customers in an entire day and send them all lining up to Costco and Walmart with all sorts of other people? I think this policy desperately needs to be rethought. Small firms can play a role in helping COVID protection. We've offered a small business first retail strategy that would allow small firms with up to three customers to open at a time. Something's got to give here, because small businesses are angry like I have not seen them in Toronto and Peel, Manitoba, the same way, where retailers are closed.
You know, I was just going to say, one of the arguments we hear from various governments is that the big box stores also have the added ventilation supports to make their environments safer for people. Well, maybe that's something that governments ought to look at. Allow, provide support to small businesses to improve their ventilation and their systems so that for smaller environments, it's safer for customers.
Yeah, well, look, there's no perfect solution, I got to say. Dan Kelly, I always appreciate you joining us. And, of course, Ian and Tonda, who are here on a regular basis. I should remind people, next Monday, there is going to be a fiscal update. Tonda can nod if she knows if it's going to be a confidence vote. I don't think they're voting on it yet, but they won't release if it is.
No, they won't find out.
No, see, Tonda saying
I'm just nodding.
Right, that's your power play day in politics. Yeah, she's nodding. Thanks for watching. We'll be picking that up tomorrow. We'll be back here in 23 short hours. Hug your loved ones. Have a great evening.